Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I'm your host, and I am honored once again by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. Here at the Business Creators Radio Show, we go those places where you have those mastermind meetings and aha moments that can change your trajectory or at least bring you a bit closer to your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. I'm coming to you today from my couch here in beautiful Las Vegas, known to some on some days as the hottest city in America. And I have somebody here who I've spoken with before. He is a recent guest on our Brilliance Plus Passion Project. And I knew as soon as I spoke with him there that we were going to have him over here on the Business Creators Radio Show. His name is John Morris. And there's so much about him. I'm actually going to have him tell you the story because he tells it better than I do. The general idea of what we're going to be discussing today is about getting from where you are to where you want to be and how to get through the pillars of success if you're struggling in business. But John, first of all, come on in. The weather's fine.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, Adam. It's super to be here. And with all your wonderful listeners, I'm super excited about this year.
Right. And going along with this, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to have you tell us about yourself because you tell the story so much more eloquently. And I know I have some really, really intriguing questions to share with you as we go along. But first of all, tell us a bit about what you bring to the table and then give us a little bit about your journey and what's brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion.
Boy, that's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
Okay, so literally, I mean, John Morris, you know, artist, author, coach for the creative mind, based on the west coast of Scotland, student of psychology, philosophy, art, history, business, and theology. I like doing a lot of different things. Really, what we bring to the table is a lot of know-how and a lot of knowledge that is organic. It is real. It's not like 95% of the creators out there that are lying to you blatantly. And again, that's factual research. That's not just me saying it, folks.
Right.
You know, we do stuff that's very honest, very straightforward. What we put out on social media is always our best content because it registers in the people's minds. And they say, well, if he's putting that out for free, then, you know, what the heck is the paid stuff like?
Right.
You know, so with this, we're really getting going with this. We've, you know, had a lot of opportunities. We're in the presence and in the process now of looking to grant fund for over $150,000. You know, that's going to be split a number of different ways, a number of different avenues. We're really at that point now where everything's clicking into place and it makes sense to me. I know how to build businesses regardless of what they are, from, you know, the lower price point to your maximum price point, and also how to get them to work. Plus, more so than that, it's also how to acquire funding, how to acquire finance, how to acquire whatever it is that need teams, you know, knowing the value of teams, knowing that this is so much more divine than just me saying, you know, oh, it's me that wants to do this. You know, there's a lot more to that as well.
Right.
Knowing how to build projects, knowing how to build products, and knowing how to get them out there. And, you know, ultimately knowing how to list build, that's one of the biggest things that I would ever recommend to anybody.
Right. Okay. So, you come to us with a very interesting story. You know, we live in a small world, and I know that you're friends with one of my clients and friends, Brad Zolas, and he and I connected because he got word that you were going to be here. Didn't even speak with him about it, but he got the word. I guess you and him might have connected. At any rate,
I was on his show.
Yeah, at any rate, he suggested that I ask you about some certain conditions. And what's interesting about it is how you can go blind in any second and recover a day later. I really want to unpack this because I actually think it creates a framework for what we're going to discuss.
Absolutely. So it's a condition called amaurosis. Throw into the mix as well dyspraxia, dyslexia, and colitis, and you've really got a recipe for, you know, and a lot of people, and I was told by this by the doctors, like, you know, 15 years old, you're basically diagnosed with colitis, then you get all the other stuff along with it. And basically you're told, you know, sit in a chair and wait to die, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I've never really been good at following people's advice unless I specifically request it. You know, and I just decided, you know, I just, it's like that isn't how the journey is going to go. It's not how the story is going to go. You know, amaurosis came a number of years later when I was in Scotland. And the first episode that I had with that, I was sitting on a train, literally going from Prestwick or maybe even from Ayr up to Paisley for university, and sitting there looking out the window, and my sight just completely went. Like,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, literally, I was, and it was just fuzzy. It was like, you know, the old TVs when you'd switch them on and you had to tune them in before you know, everything was basically just instant like it is now. That's what it was like. It was basically just blurry vision. And the ticket conductor, you know, literally comes, talks to me, and he's just like, hey, can I check your ticket? And I'm like, really trying to play this down because you know, I don't want to freak out. Golden rule is it probably will fix itself.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, that in itself, you know, was, I can't say necessarily a scary thing. I know a lot of people would probably be like, you know, that, my goodness, that would just be terrifying. But the reason being is because my brain doesn't work that quickly. It doesn't respond to fear in the same way that people would think it would. So I've been in situations before that it should be absolutely petrifying. And it's only like, you know, an hour or two later when I'm finished with the situation, that's when it hits. But yeah, so what amaurosis is basically the optical nerve spasming, where everybody's, or most people's optical nerve is literally just pulsating. And if obviously we're on video, I could show you. Mine, when that happens, it's literally like having an epileptic fit in the optical nerve. It literally is just spasming out of control.
Yeah,
It writes itself. You know, some people get migraines from it. It's about one in 100,000 that is going to be a, you know, condition, and that's going to be a factor in people's lives. So it's incredibly rare. But when it does come on board, literally you got to shut down everything because you can't see. So
yeah. Well, you know, that's seems, when I heard that and you told me the story, it seems in a way sort of like a metaphor for kind of what we're actually going to be discussing here today, the whole concept of how we get from where we are to where we want to be, dealing with the struggles in business. And as entrepreneurs, we get a view of the world and business in a way that an employee doesn't. We see the roller coaster ride that goes behind making payroll, for example. That's just one of the things. And then when you get unexpectedly whaled with a big automatic charge that you weren't expecting because you had just done a cash raise to get just enough money to cover things you were expecting, and now you've got about 2 hours to come up with $1,000. I'm not saying anything that a lot of other people haven't told me that they've experienced. This is not new. So when I heard your story, I was thinking of the metaphor of how abruptly those changes happened for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a fantastic point of view. And from it, for me, and I say this anytime I begin working with a business partner, I intentionally eliminate as many potential things to go wrong as physically possible. That comes down to the careers that I work with in the art industry, the people that I work with, both business partners and teams and staff. You know, at the end of the day, part of the reason of really starting to understand financial intelligence and really how I got to this place, in terms of the knowledge acquired, was because a couple of years ago, I tore my midsection, got really ill. And I was just like, okay, I need to really think now. By this point, I've been in business for about 15 years. I'm closing in on the 20-year mark, as we talked about last year. And, you know, literally, it was a case of I need to get to a point now where if I don't work again, I literally, you know, not just me, but my family is taken care of. You know, acquiring right. business wealth is great, and I don't diminish it in any way, shape, or form. But acquiring personal wealth is more important. And the problem that I have with a lot of entrepreneurs that are out there now, a lot of these social media influencers, is they are giving really bad advice to very easily influenced people
right.
on how to do this and how to do that. And it's fine for them. They've got no, you know, sort of conscience about it. But for the people that are actually going through it, for everyone's success story of somebody, you know, getting a loan and 10x-ing what they're doing, there's 100,000 other people out there that didn't fill in their LLC application form properly, that didn't tick right. all the boxes, that didn't do everything properly. And like you rightly said, I mean, everything can come crashing down on you, which is why, again, we do not go for loans in any way, shape, or form. We don't work with friends and best friends or family. We don't take money from them. Because right. literally, you think that you've got all these friends and everything. You owe them a couple of pounds here and there, a couple of dollars, and you watch how fast people turn. A friend yeah. today can be, you know, your worst enemy tomorrow, your worst nightmare tomorrow. So that was really, you know, the big turning point for me. There was a number of things that went on from sort of 2021 onwards, but that was a big turning point for me where I was like, okay, you've taken care of your spiritual, you know, transformation and everything.
Okay.
Now it's time to, you know, take care of the financial stuff. And you can learn all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I was just 2 years studying financial intelligence before I actually, you know, did stocks and shares, before I did investments, before I started building courses and really building, you know, the six pillars of business that we have now, you know, and I'm more, honestly, I'm more interested in what I'm doing now because I have a philosophy just before we move on from this, that when you're, you know, sort of north to 30s, I would say that you want to be learning. Not to 20, you want to be learning. 21 to 30s, 40s, 50s, you want to be doing. 60s and above, you want to be teaching. So I'm more interested in actually doing in this phase in my life rather than, as a lot of other folks are doing, it's like, well, I make it look like my course is working, but really it isn't. So I'm going and teaching this stuff. And I would rather be the philosophy that I can do and I can teach and I can capitalize off both versus, you know, those who can do and those who can't teach. Well, I do both.
So right.
a mixture of that.
Well, again, it's another case where, as I see it, we have binary choices inflicted on us, but it's not always that simple.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems like regardless, I mean, to me, of what we're doing at any point in our day, there's some sort of binary choice we have to take. And one is right and one is wrong. But what about nuance? Because the gray area is where a lot of things seem to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean gray as in morally questionable. I mean gray as in not cut and dried.
Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting concept for sure. You know, the whole, so in some ways, preconditioned idea of good and bad, right and wrong. You know, the way that I kind of look at it and where I'm at right now in 2024, it literally comes down to you only ever have two choices to make. Are you going to do it or are you not?
Right.
And it is that simple. Everything else is fluff. You know, you've only two emotions that are actually worthwhile, which is love or fear. You know, everything else navigates and builds out of these two emotions. It's all fluff. And that's why people get caught up. And I found myself in a situation recently where I was basically, you know, having to make that decision. And, you know, you can wrestle yourself around in many, many circles and say, you know, do I do this, do I that? Doesn't matter. All that you need to know is, are you going to do it or you're not? So even with colitis, amaurosis, dyslexia, dyspraxia, all the other things going on, family dramas, all that, are you going to do this or are you not? That's all that matters in life.
Right. So one of the things that I see is that oftentimes we don't know where to go.
Mm-hmm.
In our journey, we can be given some sort of map, but it may not really tell us the whole picture. We may be given some sort of formula, but not, it's like The analogy I use is when you look up a recipe on the internet and they say the seven ingredients, but they don't say how much of the seven ingredients. They show you pictures and you're expected to just sort of figure it out from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would completely agree with that. I think some of the times, though, that people do know exactly where they're meant to be and what it is that meant to do, but based on societal, ideologies, constraints, what other people think, which is a really dangerous game to play. I think what it comes down to is there's not a lack of resources to make whatever you want to do happen. There's a lack of resolve to make happen. And I'll give a prime example. Just before Christmas, 2023 was a really massive year for us. So we sat down at the end of 2023 and we're kind of sort of closing everything up. We're all ready for a big break and everything. And I haven't had a decent break by that point in 150 days. So you're looking at basically since summer, I've been working and my VA who put this together, she said, there's an NFL football player that's interested in talking with you and doing a deal and all this kind of stuff. And we talked about it. Now, the deal that he pitched me was, I was just like, this is dumb. The deal I pitched him was basically a deal for 2.4 million that we had on the table. One of the biggest deals, that I'd ever been involved with. So I was super excited just to pitch that deal. And then all of a sudden, there's someone else that wants a meeting and someone else that wants a meeting and so on and so on. And it literally gets to the point of, okay, that didn't happen. There was a time where we didn't get funding that we really thought we needed for staff. And it just kept coming back to, okay, that didn't happen. Move on. That didn't happen. Move on. That didn't happen. Move on. And there was literally, I mean, even in 2024, there was hurdles. If you are getting into business, if you're going to try and do anything, there are going to be hurdles that you literally have to go through. If you're going to be a best-selling author, do you think somebody is just going to give you the keys to the kingdom and say, right, here, your first book, here's 50 grand. J.K. Rowling, for her first book of the Harry Potter series, I think made about $7,000, which is about £3,000. But again, you drive forward. You say, okay, fine, that didn't work. Bang, let's do something else. Let's do something else. Let's do something else. Let's reapply. I found out actually from the funding committee that knocked back our grant application. Everything was done perfect. And I asked them for it. They said, we strongly advise you to request the application papers and everything that have all of our notes on. It was basically a wink, wink. We believe in what you're doing. We believe in what you're about. And we want to help you get this money. And what it came down to, our competency was high, our ability was high, our execution, everything was high, and everything was, as high as it could be. But the one thing we didn't do to enough extremist detail was the specifics on how we would market, which type of the three types of marketing were we going to do, how were we going to do it, who were we going to approach. And they wanted everything down to your client's blood sample. That's the level of detail that you have to go to sometimes. So it's always a case of, like you say, I mean, some people genuinely sit there and they feel like they don't know where they're going. The best thing you can do is ask God, is literally sit there and say, what am I here for? What are you passionate about? What is it that you do? You're in control. You decide what you want to do. You figure out what it is that you want to do, and you work backwards. And you can do that as many times throughout your life as you like. It is that simple. But then you've got to take action to make happen whatever it is that you want.
You can ask God, and they say that God always answers, but sometimes he says no.
It's an interesting concept. Why God would ask, or why, if you were genuinely asking God, what is it that I'm meant to do with my life? What is it that, I'm about? Why God would turn around and say no to that? I don't know. It might be more often than not that people tell God what they want to do. And you think you know what you want to do. You think you're ready to be a millionaire. I mean, how many people have, both you and I, Adam, I guarantee you people have said, oh, well, I could do what you do. Really? You could get up at 6 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning, start work, not finish till midnight, do the podcast, do the meetings, do all the other stuff, manage teams, then put products together and all this other stuff that's going on. Because as nice as, you know, the millionaire kind of thing is, you know, at the same point, there's a heck of a lot of work that goes into it that the majority of people would not be able to handle. You know, it's crazy that the level of work that, and especially if you do multiple businesses.
Right. And what I meant by that is I've also heard, and this has been told to me, that when, as they say, God says no, it's because however you conceive of God, he or she or what have you is actually trying to take away a distraction so that you can clearly see a much bigger picture that they have in mind for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes back to the point that, you know, we're just talking about, that people think they know what they want to do, but they thought they knew what they wanted to do 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago. And each time it changes, you know, that's always the really interesting point. Now, I've had a very unique journey. We've covered a little bit of that so far. I'm sure we're going to cover more of it as the show progresses. But what I found is, for the majority, certainly where I'm at right now, you know, I know exactly what it is that I'm here to do. I know exactly what it is that, you know, it is my purpose. And people will be shocked by it, because it's not oftentimes what people think it is. A lot of the other stuff is fluff. But sometimes you may have to do some of the fluffy stuff to get things set up so as you can do, you know, what it is that you believe that you're here to do. You know, and if you're, you know, getting that silent treatment and things, and sometimes God's waiting for you to make a decision and say, what do you want to do? You know, it's like you're always looking to me, but what do you want to do? You have that same divine power inside you that runs through me. And that's you know, in every historical spiritual text that exists, and that's where your theology comes in. You know, and that's what people, again, the more that you know, the more that you actually realize, oh wait, there's a lot more going on here than what I first thought.
Right, absolutely. So I'm going to ask you you are taking this from a macro point of view, so I want to a degree balance this with a micro point of view.
Okay.
So part of what we're discussing is, if you find yourself struggling in business and the pillars of success, first of all, I'm not sure if you've actually itemized them, but what are the pillars?
So for me, the pillars for me are the different areas of business that I work in, whether it's the creative industry, whether it's the coaching industry, and we've got 6 different businesses. Again, and they do, as much as possible, if you're going to have multiple businesses, you want to have them almost overlinking. So for example, Creative Business Made Simple, I know I can partner up with Art from the Heart because it's the same audience for the most part. You know, again, the same with in the wrestling industry, I can talk about that because, again, you know, the stuff that's going on now with the WWE, the sex scandals with Vince McMahon, the stuff that's going on with their positioning, what they're doing. You know, you can learn a lot from business by watching and talking about some of these bigger things. So the pillars for me, really, you know, as I say, you've got 3 industries or 3 businesses that are in the painting industry and the creative industry, whether or not that's, you know, creating custom made artwork of pets and portraits, whether it's landscapes, seascapes, you know, whatever, whether it's teaching artwork. And then on the flip side of that, you've also got how to build a successful business, how to build a successful creative business, how to build a successful art business, on and on and on. So you always really want to have things that cross over. I think when people run into danger, oftentimes is when they do something that completely is apart from, you know, what it is that the rest of the businesses do. So that'd be like me going being an engineer, for example. It wouldn't make sense with the other 6 businesses. You know, it wouldn't cross over as much.
Right.
If that answers your question.
In a way it does. And also looking from a micro perspective, let's say that you are, I'm going to ask this question because I think you might have a different perspective on it or something to give us to think about. I see a lot of ads, particularly on Facebook for courses, and I'm not putting any of these down because I've taken a couple of these little courses and they've actually given me some great insights. But the premise behind them is, If you need to make $1,000 within the next hour, what would you post? So that's not actually the question I'm asking you.
Okay.
What I'm asking is if you need, because I heard that, oh boy, here we go.
No, I knew the answer to it. It was just a case of which product I would go with first.
Right. But let me just ask you that question. If somebody needed to raise $1,000 in an hour, what could be the fastest approach to doing that?
There's a number. It depends on a lot of things, but the first thing that I would say is a person's competency. So for me, and I can only speak for me, prime example, stocks and shares. There are a number of companies out there right now that are really growing fast. Mm-hmm. It depends as well. Are we talking somebody who has initial capital to start up or somebody who's flat broke?
Right.
Because if we're talking about somebody who's flat broke, who has no money at all, what I would do then is say, right, what skills do you have? What skills do you make? So for example, again, prime example, if I had no money at all, it all left, the first thing that I would do would be to take a photograph of one of my former custom paintings, probably of a white cat, and I would post in all of the cat groups. Now, organically, you could spend, $50,000 or whatever and reach, maybe a million people. I could post in 10, 15, 20 groups from the reputation that I built up over the last 20 years and reach probably close to, 5 million organically that I don't have to pay a dime for. Then you start to have that conversation with people. It does take a little bit longer. So again, in an hour, you would be hard pressed. If you've got to that stage where, you need to make money in an hour, something's really gone wrong with your observational skills. Something's really gone wrong with your financial management, financial intelligence. I think by that point, if I needed to make that level of money that quick, I'd probably be ringing, that would be the exception, ringing parents or ringing friends and saying, hey, I need to make this money. Or the church that I used to work for. That probably wouldn't fly nowadays, but certainly back then. There's a number of things. So I would look at a person's competency. Do they have money to invest? If they don't have money to invest in the flat broke, then I would basically be out on the streets looking for something that I can, that's either broken that I can fix or somebody that I can use my skills to help build their business in return for them paying.
Right. All right. That makes the case. So basically that's almost a standard answer. But what I liked is you put a different spin on it. So you're an artist, so you've done paintings and you have this particular painting of a white cat. So take a picture of it, put it in the cat groups and look for somebody who's going to get excited about having that painting.
Well, it's not even that. That's not necessarily the thing that you want to do. What you want to do is basically look for somebody who has cats, who has seen that painting, is like, oh, wow, he's painted this painting of somebody else's cat.
Right.
I want him to paint a picture of my cat. So instead of, just trying to sell one picture, I've now got 5 million people. Well, if 1% of those people see that ad or even 0.1%, see it and respond, I'm not only building up my audience, but then the potential of massive clientele to paint for is just, multiple times, like 50 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, compared to what other people could do just trying to sell one item. And that's the difference when you take on custom orders and you know how to do it. It's like, okay, I've got this painting, done this painting, it's sold, wonderful. Here's what I could do for you. That's the key. That's the key right there. This is what, and then you can do that with dogs, you can do that with people, you can do that with rabbits, horses, guinea pigs. If you're good enough and you post art into all those pages, I guarantee you will get sales.
The idea of using that painting as an example to potentially get a retainer today to paint somebody else's pet.
Correct.
That's perfect.
So basically, you do the work once, you get paid forever.
Right. That's fantastic. That's great. So let's see. Where did I want to go next? I had a few other things that were actually a little bit outside of what we were originally planning to cover here, but I thought might be pretty interesting. So
absolutely.
So overall, and this is, I'm going to start from the bottom and work my way up here. What? Where do your ideas come from?
Every idea is divine, quite honestly. And I know people may hear that and they'd be like, "Pah, believe me, there is nothing that is, you can touch, taste, see, smell, that hasn't come from a thought." You know, again, just look around you. Every single thing came from a thought. So for me, with the new novel series that I'm working on, which again is still hush hush, we are almost at the point now where we're ready to really unload this in a big way.
Right.
Honestly, when this came out, it wasn't just a case of one book, by the way, that's 800 and something pages of really great historical fiction. It's a phenomenal story. But this was, an initial series of 11 books with four spin-offs and then a multiple. I think it's like up at 25 different books now. And I see every single aspect of it play out in my mind like a film.
Right.
There is literally, even the team will be like, go and talk to John. He's the ideas guy. All I do is I put it out there. I say, God, I need to know that, an idea, or I need something, whether it's AI, whether it's, whatever direction that I'm wanting to go in next. And then I just leave it in the hands of God. And, literally within sometimes minutes, sometimes hours, sometimes days, the next step will come along, and that's it. That literally is like, oh wow, okay, that was easy to do. I think honestly, people get so stuck because they literally try to force things to happen. Well, if you've ever watched a child, playing with things and they're trying to force the blocks into a cube or whatever, you know that they're going to end up breaking it. That's part of the process. But adults do the same thing as well. So you always want to let everything flow. When you get to that point of a creative block, step away from it. Step away from it. Put it in the hands of God. And, there have been times that I've been sitting at my computer and I've been like, God, I need the answer to this. And the answer came, and it was step away for now. Go and chill out on the sofa. Go play a game. Go watch a video. Go watch a film. And literally, as I was watching that film, an entire paragraph, an entire chapter, an entire half of the book came to me.
Wow.
So ideas always come to you, flow through you and out of you. We never own anything. It's one of the biggest delusions that human beings have. We never own anything. We just experience everything.
We never own anything. We just experience everything. That's what you just said.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. That is a very interesting thought. And what I also noticed in my own life is that sometimes I get my most creative ideas when I'm doing the most rote possible activities.
Yes. I think
now I've heard there's actually a science behind that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So again, like doing the dishes, for example, one of the best times, if you want to learn how to be a really good speaker, a really good communicator, you've got multiple times during the day. And it drives me insane when clients will say, oh, well, I've just no time to practice. So how many times a day do you go to the toilet, the loo? How many times a day are you having, a wash or a bath? How many times a day are you, cooking or making some food? How many times a day are you traveling to and from work? How many times a day are you doing the dishes? Those are some of your best interview times.
Right.
As a guy with dyspraxia, I know that if I don't practice speaking, I actually can lose the ability to speak coherently. And again, if you're a podcast host, if you're a show host and everything, you rely on the ability not just to speak, but to be animated, to be alive, and to be, for something to be there. That takes practice, to speak comfortably and cognitively, and hopefully sound at least that little bit educated. You need to not only read the stuff, listen to the audiobooks, but then you need time to process it so you can then reverberate it in a way that makes sense, for people to listen to. Because some of this stuff, like, again, you get into existentialism and philosophy and everything else.
Right.
It's hard for the majority of people to understand. So that's part of the job that I do, is to take these complicated things, let them filter through my mind, and then just, then be able to talk about it. But that's, as you rightly said, Adam, it's sometimes in the mundane tasks that your greatest ideas will come to you. I tend to find it's sometimes when I'm about to go to bed. You know, you turn off the lights and there's a chapter that you've been working on. There's a specific phrase that is just like amazing. And you've got to write it down really quickly. And you have to write it down because if you ignore it, guess what? You've got another 50 or 60,000 thoughts coming along on the conveyor belt of life's activity and you will miss it. So you always right. want to have some form of note-taking device. And your mobile phone is a great one.
Well, yeah. The mobile phone thing is, having some sort of note taker thing or having the ability to give yourself voice notes, although then you have to go back and retrieve those later. I personally, and this is just me, I'm not a big fan of, especially when people send me voice notes. I don't want to listen to them unless the person is paying me to be there, unless the person is paying me as my client.
Yeah.
Because, and here's the reason why. It has to do with kinesthetics. I get a voice note in my messenger. I now have to hold the phone up to my ear and play it.
Yeah.
And then I have to, sometimes I've listened to it three or four times. Mm-hmm. And if they gave me any information that I need to do something, I might have to listen to it a few more times, like let's say a phone number or a link or something like that. Where something in text, I can see it, and if need be, I can copy paste it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do send voice messages quite a lot, but that's usually because I'm going from one area to the next, and to stand and text something for me, you can end up walking into things. But the other thing is as well, I think, and again, a lot of people probably don't realize this, but everything you put in a text, it is a legal sort of statement that you're putting out there, even if it's a private thing. If the case ever comes to it, that's why a lot of people and business people always say never put anything in writing. And I get it. I mean, a lot of the multi-billionaires, they've a right to be paranoid about right. a lot of things. But it's interesting for sure.
Right. Well, if it's recorded, it can still come back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's your voice. And then obviously you've got to prove that, that is your voice and, or that it isn't your voice and whatever it might be.
Right. And even, even when you think about the content of it, could be the issue. So,
yeah.
So with all that in mind, and, we have maybe about 10 minutes here. So as you always begin to head toward wrapping up here. Let me just ask you overall, what inspires John Morris?
History, time periods, places that I can visually see in my mind. But ultimately, I think it's the next big project. We were just talking about this in a team meeting last week. And each person was going around and saying what it is. And as I'm thinking about it, I thought, well, I've just finished writing, two books. I'm very near finishing the third. And there's times that you sit there and think, oh, this is, it's so precious. You want to hold on to it. You want to love it. And you're going to be really upset when it's finished. And it's the journey. And I found that I wasn't. And I found that over and over again, regardless of the career that I've been in, whether it's bodybuilding, music, youth work, art, ministry, whatever. When it's come to the end, I've been ready to move on to that next, adventure. And, I always sort of, folks, enjoy the process when you're going through it, because at some point it is going to end. You're going to move on, but you move on to the next great adventure, whatever that looks like. And I think that's what inspires me the most.
Right. Absolutely. I'm surrounded here by my podcast production team, who are Princess Alessandra Francesca and Princess Stella Juliana. And they are both black cats. And they're curious about why a white cat? Because you mentioned the painting of a white cat.
Yeah. So the answer to that is really simple. I've painted cats now, again, for close to 20 years. The white cat statistically is always the one, whenever I put that out anywhere on Facebook, all over the world, it is always the one that gets maximum results, and it's been tried and tested. That's always the one. It's this specific painting. It is a specific where it's literally zoomed up so close that all you can see is the cat's face, the fur, the eyes, the nose, the mouth, And that's the portrait. It's really, you know, a powerful piece. And literally, I mean, that one commission alone has probably made, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars just on the premise of being able to reshare a photo of me standing there, big smile on my face, you know, looking, you know, hey, I've just done this. And, you know, and people look at what you can do. They visualize it in their own mind. And they're like, if he can do that for someone else, could he do that for me?
Right. Another comment is, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like you're in about five businesses.
Yeah.
And
at least.
and I want to get your insights on this, because we have, you know, a lot of us have seen that book called The One Thing. Mm-hmm. And we get told that we really want to focus on just one thing at a time, achieve one thing at a time. And, mm-hmm. you know, this is one of the frustrations I deal with folks who express interest in my Launch Your Podcast Fast program, is they say, I want to do a podcast, but right now I'm focusing on this one other thing. I'm thinking, my program is based on the idea that you do an interview with me and answer a few questions and the rest of it's mm-hmm. done for you. It's like, while you're doing that other thing, this other, I just need you from time to time to sign off on stuff mostly. Yeah. It's not even a big time effort. It's mm-hmm. taking out of your hands. But this whole thing, you know, permeates to the point of, if you're doing anything other than the one thing you're working on, then it's a complete distraction. Your market's going to look at it and think that basically everything you're doing is a clusterfuck, because how can they say you're in podcasting if you're also in assessments? How can they say that you're in content marketing when you're also a painter? I have a friend who is is in real estate. He has a social media marketing company, and he also wrote a book about his experiences in prison. And how and the skills that he learned in prison, and how this helped him when he got out so that he didn't get caught in the recidivism trap and was able to build a business. And he uses this to go back into prisons and mentor mm-hmm. People who are going to be released soon, to show them there's a new way. And somebody messaged me about him, and they say, you know, I see what he's doing, and but he's supposed to be doing, he's supposed to be a social media marketing guy. What the hell is all this prison stuff? This is a distraction. Who's going to take him seriously if he's talking about jail? But yeah, you're probably having the same reaction I am, just to that thought.
No, quite honestly, I'm not, because again, when you know how to set up business and you know how to diversify, you can do a lot of different things. You can build up a lot of different audiences. So the answer to that is really simple. A lot of people are now recognizing, oh, wait, I actually can do something different. And I talk about this a number of times in books, a number of times on shows. You know, lists are your best friend. So I'll give you a prime example. My day will normally start anywhere between 4 and 6, maybe 7 in the winter, because I tend to sleep in more in the winter because it's darker.
Uh-huh.
Immediately, I will get up. I will make myself a cup of tea. I will sit down. I will be either writing or editing the novel series. Then I will have either breakfast with my wife, or I'll go in the gym. Then from there, I will go upstairs and I'll be doing the blog about Creative Business Made Simple. From there, we'll probably have lunch. And in the afternoon, you know, basically you've got, well, you might be, doing a course on artificial intelligence. You might be doing a podcast on business. You might be painting. You might be packing paintings, shipping paintings, booking the courier, managing a team, all uh-huh. of those things you can do, but again, to the credit, you are only focusing on one thing at a time. You do that one job, you move on again. And this is how you can build up extraordinary wealth. Then you might be doing stocks and shares. You might be checking out how, you know, your latest stocks are progressing or not, as the case may be. You got to keep your finger on the pulse. You know, while you're painting, you might be listening to a podcast on financial intelligence or AI uh-huh. or a book on Immanuel Kant's, you know, existentialism, or whatever you want to, you know, go for. You can do a lot of things, and people get so limited. And this is what was, you know, brings us somewhat full circle back to, you know, the dumbness of the majority of these social media influencers that are out there that have no idea what they're talking about. Dave Patel, a friend of ours from TikTok, literally, Alex Amonzi, myself, and there was others, concluded that 95% of people online that are claiming to be millionaires are lying. There's only
5%. Yeah, really?
Yeah, but here's the other kicker. The majority of people online that are claiming, you know, and have these multi-million follower accounts, the majority are making $358 a month. Okay?
$358
a month? $358 a month. That is why, again, you only want to listen to people's opinions if they've done what you want to do for longer and had more success than you have. That's why I don't listen to a whole lot of people's opinions. So, getting back to your original point, I do so many things because if I was just to be locked in a room all day and told, right, well, you need to paint from dawn till dusk, I would go out of my mind. I'd be bored stupid. My body physically would not be able to handle it now. The same right. with writing, the same with podcasting. I need the variety in my life. And guess what? When you know how to build up business, you know how to get grant funding, you know how to acquire wealth, you know how to do this stuff, you can do this over and over and over and over again. You know, and it is literally the simplest of things. It just takes some time to build up. Now, where we're at right now is there are several really big things that are on the horizon. And I'm looking at it thinking, oh, boy, been here before. But it's literally, okay, list them out and work through them one by one. Build the website for Team Life Coaching. Get the domain sorted out. Get the copyright sorted out. Acquire the next, you know, sort of season of funding. Which means you've got to sit and do, you know, funding applications. Well, with ChatGPT, you know, that levels the playing field. You know, list these things out. You can do all of these different things, but you must do one thing at once. So I wouldn't be funding or grant application funding and painting at the same time. And I wouldn't be podcasting and trying to make content at the same time. You know, with regards to content, we bulk create content. So literally I'll record, you know, 104 videos of podcasts and things within a 2-month radius. And that's our entire year's worth of content done and dusted. Then if I need to make any sort of special announcements or anything, well, I can do that. And you've basically freed up a year or two, basically, to do the other stuff that you need to do. All the while long, you are developing and building a relationship with people. So think smart.
Right. So let me phrase the question a slightly different way. And maybe you answered this and I missed it, or maybe I needed to phrase this a different way. You described a typical day in the life of John Morris, who may be working on some things that are public and also may be working on some things that are things in development in the background.
Yeah.
I'm referring to being, you know, being public, what people see in your social media, what they see in your email promotions, and you may be in multiple different markets in the same day.
So what I would suggest then with that, if you let's actually pick some professions just to make it a little bit easier. If you're an engineer,
right,
and you're also a real estate agent, okay, let's pick two polar opposite things. So I'm not going to email a real estate agent sort of group and followers and people that are interested, audience, that's what I'm looking for. I'm not going to email them information about engineering because they could care less. But I'm going to be building multiple audiences. So for example, Paint Our Pet, I'm not going to be talking to them in any way, shape or form about my mountain paintings, about Creative Business Made Simple, about Teen Life Coaching, about anything else other than pets.
Right.
And all the content is there. I've built it up over 20 years. So I've got, you know, 20 years worth of content and paintings and videos that I can share with people. And you build it through the Facebook groups. You build it through Instagram. The same with Mountain Man Art. Mountain Man Art, is, you know, I'm not going to be sharing anything with regards to pet paintings or with regards to people paintings or with regards to Creative Business Made Simple. My generic audience who just loves my personal brand and what I do, I'm going to share everything with them. And if they don't like it, they're going to tell me because they won't be interested. They won't like, they won't share, they won't comment, they won't do anything. And that's how you know if you're exhausting an audience. So all you do is really simple. You have your current audience and you create Facebook business groups. And if you've got Paint Our Pet, Teen Life Coaching, Art from the Heart, whatever.
Yep.
All you do then is invite the people on your list to follow. If they follow, it's because they want to know more about this. If they don't, it's because they don't care. You know, and that's how you can do multiple things. So if it's your personal brand, and this is where it gets a little bit tricky and more so on Instagram. If, again, you're a real estate agent and you're an engineer, you got to be careful how you do it, but you can cross over the audiences because they're more interested in your personal brand. You know, sometimes you are going to put out content that is just for fun and for engagement. Other times you're going to put out content for making money and building business. And that's, you know, that's fine. You can do that. But each platform is going to offer a different thing. Does that answer your question?
Yes, actually it does. It wasn't the answer that I, not that I'll say I was expecting a specific answer, but you actually did get where I was going with it. Because what I was getting at is, I mean, I'm on, you know, I'm kind of, you know, scrolling through social media as I have this conversation. One of the many reasons we do the Business Creators Radio Show in audio only format is so I don't have to hold my media pose.
Yeah.
Because these are not Q&A type interrogatories. These are mastermind conversations. And let's think about, John, when you're having a conversation at the mastermind level with somebody, are you like holding a media pose, staring straight into a webcam? Imagine, I mean, you're likely to have this. I mean, let's use our mutual friend Brad Zolas as an example. Yeah. Have you met him personally?
Yeah. Well, I've met him since we've been doing the shows. That's probably as close, but we've never met in the flesh.
Okay. So let's say you met him in the flesh, as you would say. And let's make it real easy. Let's say he goes over to the United Kingdom and you and him go to a pub for some fish and chips. Did I get all that right so far?
Sounds good.
All right. Okay. My very limited knowledge of English slang is helping me. Now, are you going to be sitting at a table in the pub where you're on one side of the table, he is on the other side of the table, and you're both sitting in perfect poses with your elbows just off the edge of the table, your hands in front of you, your shoulders squared, staring each other in the eyes the whole time?
No. I mean, that's a game.
That's what being on Zoom calls is like.
Yeah.
What's more likely to happen is you and him may not even be directly facing each other. Mm-hmm. You may be sort of sitting kind of side by side. You look over at each other occasionally, and you're having a conversation that in some ways ebbs and flows. So let's say you ask Brad a really provocative question about something or a real brain teaser. Now, he may not be able to fire off an answer to you instantly, but you'll notice some changes in his posture. He may lean back in the chair. He may cross or uncross his legs. He may put his thumb and forefinger on his chin, the universal I'm thinking about it sign.
Yeah.
But he's going to do something with his body language and his kinesthetics that is going to signal to you non-verbally, give me a sec here.
Yeah.
I got to think about this one. Just hang loose.
Absolutely.
Now, when you're on a Zoom call with him and you're doing this whole thing where you're staring each other in the webcam and you ask him that same question and he doesn't answer within a second and a half, you're like, Brad, are you there? Are you connected? Mm-hmm. You gonna answer this? And that's a feature of getting Zoomed out.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the majority of the time, you know, my VA will always say, probably not so much now, but certainly used to, it's like, you know, good luck, you know, you may need to prepare anything. It's like, how am I meant to prepare for a call that I have no idea what people are going to ask me?
Right.
So the way that I look at it is, again, you learn as much stuff as you can. And confidence comes from knowing that you know what you're talking about. You can always tell when people know what they're talking about because they don't have to necessarily just sit there and think forever. Sometimes it's a good time, you know, to think and pause. You know, business partners of mine, Laurie and Eric Bischoff, when they came over in, I think it was September of last year, we went out to dinner and there was conversation again that ebbed and flowed. You know, we were together for about 2 hours. Uh-huh. It flew by. But it was exactly the same thing. You know, there were times that you were more engaged with Laurie. There was times that I was more engaged with Eric. There was times that they were chatting with my wife. You know, as far as I'm concerned, if I'm going out with somebody, I'm more engaged about the food. You know, I'm going to have a great time with my friends. But I'm, you know what I mean? It's like if the food's great, you know, I'm literally, it's like, sorry, guys, I'm you know, we'll talk and whatever, but I'm engaged with the food.
Yeah.
But
And
I
if,
completely
yeah.
get it.
And if you also noticed, if I may, if you also noticed that when you're in these types of hangouts where you're having these mastermind level conversations, every so often you may, you know, one of you may pick up your mobile device and check it real quick, and then everybody checks theirs.
Yeah.
It only lasts, it only lasts for about a minute, and then you all put it down and resume. Now you hear, now I hear all the, now you hear all these memes about, well, that's rude to look at your phone like that. Now there's a difference between occasionally scan it because maybe you got an alert versus being on it the whole damn time.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes you have to look at, you know, some of the factors in the way smartphones in particular are designed to create addiction. I was involved in a startup, and people used to complain. It seemed like I spent too much time staring at my phone during their meetings.
Right.
Well, I'm going to tell you candidly, their meetings were boring as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was the same damn conversation over and over and over again with no actions. Like, they're having meetings for the sake of having meetings where the same people ask the same questions, like they were earning participation points or something. So, first of all, I thought the entire exercise was 90% of it was a waste of my time because I wasn't seeing any action. I wasn't seeing any progress. Now, the second thing is the owner of the startup asked me, he went through a sequence with me. The first question he asked is, why do you pick up your smartphone while we're in the meetings? And he said, I'm not asking that to be judgmental. Why? What do you do? What is the catalyst? And I said, well, I'll see the little light blinking, or maybe I'll have an app open and it'll ding. Says, okay, so you pick it up and you check that. What happens next? I check and see what time it is. The issue was, I just needed to know what time it is. And you know how we don't really wear watches anymore? The watch is on the smartphone. So you know how we, mitigated the issue of me picking up the phone and looking at it the whole time?
Go for it.
It's real simple. There was a clock on the wall in that room. I always took a seat where I could see the clock.
Yeah.
So every so often I could just glance up. And it wasn't even, you know, I mentioned I felt like the meetings were a waste of time, but it wasn't even within that context. It was just, I'm just one of those people who always needs to know what time it is. Yeah. So have me facing a clock. I can occasionally do a quick glance and I know exactly what time it is. I don't need to look at the device to get the time, which means I can set it aside and those alerts can wait a little longer. What kept me really going back to it is I really needed to know what time it was, regardless of what the original catalyst was.
It is interesting for sure. I mean, you know, and I completely, you know, agree with you. Time to me seems to flow in and out, honestly, because when you work, you know, again, from home, you know, days just sort of blur into one to the other. What I would have suggested, it's not so much that you're picking up the phone. I, as the business owner, then would have questioned, are our meetings actually necessary? Like, again, you know, if you're having that same conversation over and over and over again, that comes down to the business owner. And it's like, if we're not, if we're having it over and over again, it means either somebody's not understanding or it's not being resolved or there's something here we need to address. It's only one of those three options. And as you rightly said, you know, You sit there and ultimately psychologically and subconsciously you're saying, what the heck am I doing here? And I know what that's like because recently I've had the same meeting four times where I've told the same person the same thing four times. And I kind of joke about it in the end and I say, you know, for goodness sake, will you write this damn thing down? You know?
Yep. But, John, there's an there's an answer to this one too.
Absolutely.
The startup kind of sputtered out because it wasn't moving anywhere.
Correct.
And then a couple years ago, the owner, he still had the website. He still had the intellectual property. He still had the means to sell it online because it was based on an online training course.
Yeah.
He just reactivated the front page of the website, sent an email to his list and announced on social media that the course was available and made 11 sales of a $500 course just like that.
There you go. Fantastic.
And all of a sudden the venture was back on again. And he even pointed out to me, it's like, it's funny. I'm paraphrasing because I remember his exact words, but he said, he said, we had all those meetings and all we really had to do was tell people we existed.
Correct. That's what it comes down to is, are you in business just for fun, ha-ha, or are you in business to make money?
Yeah.
That's and a lot of people are just in business for funny, ha-ha. And that's something I've concluded, that literally I will not go to any meeting. I mean, I very rarely meet up with anybody because a lot of it, as you rightly said, is a vast waste of my time. I've done shows like that before. Where you're sitting there thinking, what the heck am I doing? You know, being on this show, when the show host is talking to you or singing at you or whatever, or talking at you, should I say. And it's the same with meetings. So I will go once. If we can't resolve the issue, then I will take the issue with me. I'll resolve it in my own time. And then I will fire the email to, whoever it is with the issue resolved, because I will never have the same meeting twice. It is pointless. And again, that's the difference between people that are going to succeed and the people that are just going to play fart around and waste their money.
Right. Well, here is the here is the issue of, and this I think is a great place to wrap up. I saw this in a meme and it really resonated with me. I'm going to paraphrase it. I don't have it in front of me. It said, the first time we talk about this, we can talk about the problem. Yes. The second time we talk about this, we're talking about solutions, or we're not talking at all. Mm-hmm. So what I got from that is sometimes you just got to vent, bitch, whine and moan, go through that valley of whether it's depression or discouragement, what have you, because it is the feeling you have. It is the place you're in. And it's not for anybody else to say that you're not entitled to that. You're not allowed to have that. It's wrong for you to have it. So what the meme says is, I'll give you some time. I'll listen to you if you just need somebody to listen. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be one conversation only. You want to talk with me about this a second time, I'm willing to help you again, but we're talking about how we're fixing it.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I think a lot of people, they want to stay, sort of stuck. For a lot of, again, and they go around the same thing over and over and over and over again. And I completely agree with you. So I would only ever, when I was running my mentoring practice, in psychological mentorship, it would be literally one case, as you say, to talk about the issue. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes can diagnose straight away. And sometimes if it is the person that's the problem, I will tell them it's the problem. And that's okay. Because at the end of the day, you're not paying me to always be bothering about your feelings, because your feelings come from your thoughts. It always starts with a thought. Your thoughts lead to your feelings to your intentions to your actions. So when you can sit down and tell people, look, you are the root of your own problem, which is 99% of people, that I've worked with.
I got one more for you, and I think you'll love this. So we're going to go a couple minutes over if you have a couple minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Great. So this was back in 2021. I was in a session with my hypnotherapist. Great guy, by the way. And we were discussing the whole thing about how I was having challenges relating to a woman I was dating at the time. And this is after I was getting back in the game after sitting out of it for a while. Okay. So, some of the wheels were still a little rusty, what have you. And we were talking about how sometimes she seemed moody, hard to reach. She seemed to ebb and flow. And he showed me this short video of a man and a woman sitting on a couch, and they were a couple. Mm-hmm. And the man is the woman is complaining that she has a really bad headache. And the man tries to point out to her that there's literally a nail sticking out of her head. The point of it was he was trying to solve the problem of getting the nail out of her head. And she wanted him, and what she was looking for him from him was to listen to her feelings about her headache.
Yeah.
And what this taught me goes back to what we were discussing a moment ago. And I've had this with other relationships with women in particular, within a dating or romantic situation, where when it comes to this sort of thing, I'll do my best to establish a parameter with them fairly early on. And I'll ask up front, Are you looking for somebody to listen to you and commiserate with you? Or are you looking for somebody where you can tell me your problem and we work together on a solution? Yeah. I'm here for either one, but you have to tell me which one it is. Mm-hmm. And I've found that just asking for that clarity up front can solve and mitigate, if not eliminate in a few cases at least, any confusion that can lead to frustration over that.
It also reveals to you who that person is, you know, very, very
over quickly. Time. Over time, because if all they ever want to do is complain, and as I said, sometimes it's okay to just complain. Mm-hmm. And I kind of go along with that meme. I said, first time we chat about this, I will listen to you for an hour, just complain about how your life sucks. Tell me everything about it. That's fine. You want to ring me up tomorrow and talk about it some more, I'll say, that's great, but tomorrow we're talking about how we're fixing it. Uh-huh.
That's really what it comes down to, you know, is, you know, are you there to fix the problem or are you there to sit and wallow? And again, where we really started off, you know, you will only ever have two decisions in your life to make. Are you going to do this and fix it, or are you going to not and stay there and suffer?
That's, I think, is a perfect place to end up. Now, you have an invitation for our audience here, and I'm going to share it with them right now. So essentially, anybody who listens to the Business Creators Radio Show, which is the show we're on right now. So you approach John and you heard him on the Business Creators Radio Show. Tell him you did so. And you can have a 20% off discount on a one-on-one coaching session with John, where you can get way more in depth on some of the topics we covered today. So if you look in the show notes, you will find the link. I'm going to read it off twice, slowly. It is thejohnmorris.co.uk/creative-business-made-simple-home. That's a bit of a long one, so I'm going to say it one more time. thejohnmorris.co.uk, it's a British domain, /creative-business-made-simple-home with hyphens between each of those five words. So that's where you can go to discover more about how the coaching works. You can also see how to get John's books. You can see how to get his courses. Pretty much the sky's the limit. But if you wish to work with John, tell him you heard him on the Business Creators Radio Show. There's a 20% discount waiting for you.
Absolutely.
And there we go. Absolutely. With that, John, thank you so much for being with us today. It has been an honor, and believe me, an education.
Thank you. It's been super fun, and I look forward to doing it again down the line with you.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.